Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
You're listening to the program The Key on IRIB English Radio with Shiraz Hossein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program, The Key, here at IRIB English Radio. Today on The Key, we are going to be looking at a very interesting question. This question is regarding Islamic medicine in general, and specifically, it is concerned with whether or not the Ahlul Bayt, alayhi wasalam, approved of surgery as a means of curing ailments. You know, Islamic medicine is a very vast topic, and it's because a lot of hadiths have been transmitted from the Prophet and his successors regarding, you know, medicine in general and health in general. Specifically, the question we want to ask today is whether surgery was approved of by the Ahlul Bayt or not. There is a tradition which has been narrated from the Holy Prophet, sallallahu alaihi wasallam, regarding this topic. A group of his companions from the Ansar, the helpers, they once came to the Prophet Muhammad, sallallahu alaihi wasallam, and asked him if it was permissible, and he gave them permission to cure the stomach pains of one of their neighbors. So the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam asked them, "How do you intend to go about curing him?" They answered that there is a Jewish doctor who we are aware of, and he intends to open up this person's stomach and to attempt to pull something out of his body and cure him in this way. The Prophet ﷺ was not fond of this method of curing this person, but the Ansar, his companions, they kept insisting on him giving them the permission to do so, and so eventually the Prophet did. This Ansar then went back and, you know, they referred to the Jewish doctor. This Jewish doctor performed his surgery. He opened up the stomach of that person and he washed it, and then he sewed up this person's stomach again. Ironically, this person was cured of his ailment. The people, these Ansar, they gave news to the Prophet about what transpired. When the Prophet heard of what happened, he said, "The person, the being who has created pain, he has also created, a cure for that pain," meaning God. "And the best of treatments is cupping, hijamat, in order, and also the use of black pepper." The Prophet here, so in two places in this hadith, the Prophet kind of expresses his dissatisfaction with surgery as a means of curing an ill person, right? One in the beginning when he initially disapproved of the surgery for the Muslim, and secondly after he heard about what happened, the Prophet said that preferably it would have been preferable for this person to have referred to cupping, hijamat, or the use of herbs such as black pepper and these kind of things. So this perhaps alludes to the Prophet's dissatisfaction, at least at the level of kirahat for this act, of surgery. Thank you for joining us. We were looking at surgery and its legitimacy in Islamic medicine. Until next time, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Shiraz Hossein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy, on the program The Key on IRIB English Radio.
You can also send your questions to English Radio at irib.ir.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pourreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
The elegant streets of historic Sevastopol. Ukraine and NATO still claim this city and the rest of Crimea as part of Ukraine, despite the 2014 referendum on joining Russia. Down by the harbour, I wanted to know how people feel about Ukrainian threats of taking back this city.
Crimea is not baggage to transfer in and out. People don't want to return to Ukraine, and they never identified as Ukrainian.
I don't want Crimea to return to Ukraine. We are Russian. We speak Russian. We were raised as Russian, and we have Russian culture. I was born in 1986, and never in my life did I feel myself Ukrainian. I have Ukrainian citizenship, but all my life I considered myself Russian and living in a Russian city.
My personal opinion was Crimea was Russian and remains Russia. I'm an ordinary man, and this is my opinion. It will be bad if someone wants to take away Crimea. But I'm against the war that is going on. It's terrible what is going on in my beloved Russia.
A Russian fighter jet flies overhead, a common occurrence, perhaps returning from a combat mission in Kherson. Sometimes cruise missiles can be seen from the harbour, fired by Russia's Black Sea Fleet, which is based in the city.
Let them dream. It's not harmful to dream. We are at home. Nobody asked our opinion when Crimea became part of Ukraine. We were forced to become Ukrainian citizens. 30 years later, we returned home. We were tormented and were worried. Ukrainians were treating us badly. Everyone here is Russian.
Soviet leader Nikita Khrushchev gave Crimea to Ukraine in 1954. Many see that as a historic mistake, not reflective of the wishes of locals.
Now, I have found a couple of people who are more pro-Ukrainian. They don't want to say their views openly, and they do tend to be from a younger demographic born after the fall of the Soviet Union. But even amongst that age group, they are very much in the minority.
So Ukraine and NATO say that they want to take back Crimea from Russia. How do you feel about that?
I wish you good luck. Let's try. They can try, but they won't at all. It's a Russian place. What can I say more?
So we are Russians.
While Russia and Ukraine continue to claim this city as their own, one thing is not in doubt. The vast majority of people living here want to be part of the Russian Federation. Zhenimel, Sevastopol, Crimea.
South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol has been under pressure for his hardline policy against North Korea, as tensions increase amid renewed large-scale military exercises with the U.S. This week, he sought to reassure the National Assembly and the public.
We will strengthen deterrence against North Korea with overwhelming capabilities through combined defense posture between South Korea and the U.S. and the trilateral security cooperation between South Korea, the U.S., and Japan, so that our people can continue their daily lives without worry.
Progressive civil society worries the Korean Peninsula has fallen into crisis, with unification becoming more and more remote. They oppose the military exercises, demanding an end to the drills and a rethinking of South Korea's alliance with the United States.
From the 31st, the South Korean and U.S. forces will conduct the largest ever joint air war exercise in Korea, with 250 Air Force units deployed to strike hundreds of strategic bases in North Korea at the same time. The Korean Peninsula should not be an outpost for American hegemony in the world. This land should not be an American war base.
The U.S. South Korea drills have continued since the end of August, following North Korea's testing of dozens of ballistic missiles. South Korea this week staged a large-scale amphibious landing drill. North Korea views such military exercises as a rehearsal for invasion. South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol has emphasized the need for the U.S. to show a strong commitment toward extended deterrence, the so-called nuclear umbrella. But that may not be enough, with stronger conservative voices here calling for South Korea to develop its own nuclear weapons. Frank Smith, Seoul.
Lebanon and Israel have finalized a U.S. brokered deal aimed at resolving a maritime dispute. President Michel Aoun signed a letter on Thursday endorsing the agreement. The final paperwork was submitted to the United Nations in Naqoura, southern Lebanon, concluding a long path of indirect negotiations with the Israeli regime. Separately, the Israeli cabinet, led by Prime Minister Yair Lapid, also approved the agreement. The regime's representative then delivered the signed copy to the UN at the Naqoura point. Hezbollah Secretary General stressed in a brief statement that the deal is a victory for Lebanon's government, people, and resistance. Nasrallah also declared the end of Hezbollah's exceptional mobilization over the maritime dispute, saying the resistance movement had accomplished its mission regarding the issue. The Hezbollah leader said the agreement is not an international treaty.
What happened in Naqoura is not normalization with Israel. This deal is not an international treaty and is not a recognition of Israel. Israel itself has admitted it received no security guarantees.
U.S. Envoy Amos Hochstein, who was with the Lebanese delegation in the southern Lebanese town of Naqoura, had met the top Lebanese officials.
I truly believe and hope that this can be an economic turning point in Lebanon for a new era of investment and continued support to lift up the economy and make sure that whatever arrangements happen, they're done openly, transparently, and making sure that the benefits are felt directly by all the Lebanese people.
Experts believe this agreement would put Lebanon on the map of natural gas exporters. President Michel Aoun stressed in his statement that demarcating the southern maritime border is a technical matter that has no political implications and won't change his country's policy towards the Israeli regime. U.S. President Joe Biden has hailed the maritime border deal as a historic breakthrough. For Lebanon, it unlocks the possibility to exploit its own natural resources at a time when the West is seeking gas suppliers and looking for alternatives to Russian gas. Maryam Saleh, Naqoura, South Lebanon.
Many millions of people living across the 27-nation EU are struggling to survive. Brussels resident Jefferson Araujo has endured two rent increases since March. His landlord says her mortgage is going up and so a further rent hike is needed.
You go to the market, you cannot buy anything anymore because the price is too high. And I'm thinking maybe to leave Brussels because I'm working in a hotel 10 hours a day. Like sometimes I have just one day off a week.
In an attempt to bring down soaring inflation, the European Central Bank, which manages the euro, has announced interest rates are going up by a further 75 basis points. That represents a huge increase for people repaying home loans. The economic outlook could get even worse, the ECB warns.
Confidence could deteriorate further, and supply-side constraints could worsen again. Energy and food costs could also remain persistently higher than expected.
Some EU leaders have warned the ECB that increasing interest rates so aggressively could push the eurozone into a deep recession. Higher rates impede business expansion and employment. Charities fighting social injustice often point out all of those taking the decisions that lead to higher inflation and interest rates are insulated from the impact simply because they are the richest individuals in society. Critics say the EU's move to cut out Russia's cheap gas over the war in Ukraine is backfiring. Despite this, a ninth round of sanctions against Moscow is being prepared.
The Commission and the EES are obviously constantly
working in the context of the sanctions on making sure that we are ready should there be a need for further sanctions.
Peace seems to be a dirty word in Western capitals. This as the US weapons and energy sectors make enormous profits, while ordinary EU citizens pay a very high price. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Iranians have held nationwide rallies to condemn the Wednesday terrorist attack in the southern city of Shiraz. The protesters took to the streets in different cities following Friday prayers. They chanted slogans and held banners, calling for the perpetrators and their backers to be brought to justice.
Today, we're here to show the world that we are all together. We are a powerful country. We're going to fight against terrorism. We're going to fight against violence. You want us to be separated. You want us to fight against each other, but we are the one. We are powerful.
At least 13 people, including two children, were killed after gunmen opened fire on pilgrims at the Shah Charagh Holy Shrine in Shiraz. 26 others were wounded. The Daesh terror group claimed responsibility shortly after the attack.
We strongly condemn any acts of terrorism and desecration of Muslim sanctities. We want to say that we hate London-based news channels like Iran International, Manoto and BBC because they are instigating violence and unrest in Iran.
We are here to send this message to Israel, the U.S. and their allies that through creating riots and unrest in the country, they cannot achieve their sinister goal of disintegration of Iran. We are united.
Leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, has called on security agencies, the judiciary, intellectuals, activists, and the entire nation to act in unison to confront the current which is disregarding and disrespecting people's lives, security, and sanctities. Meanwhile, Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi has also vowed that the Islamic Republic would deliver a crushing response to those who were behind the bloodshed.
The ralliers have called on Iranian authorities to prosecute the main perpetrators of the heinous crime of terrorist attack in Shiraz and take all necessary measures to maintain security in the country as soon as possible. Saman Kujuri, Tehran.
On Wednesday, Italy's new far-right-led government of Giorgia Meloni won a confidence vote in the Senate with 115 votes in favor, 79 against, and 5 abstentions. The new executive can now get down to business. Meloni, aged 45, is the leader and one of the founders of Brothers of Italy, the party that spearheaded a right-wing coalition to victory in Italy last month's election.
Among the many weights I have on my shoulders today is the fact that I am the first woman ever to lead this nation as Prime Minister.
During Tuesday's first speech in the Chamber of Deputies, Meloni had presented a political program which aims as a priority to counter soaring energy bills and a looming recession. Among the main measures to take away are plans to introduce tax cuts, lift limits on cash transactions, taxing the excess profits of the energy giants in a windfall tax, and reallocating some of the EU pandemic recovery funds.
Ma la nostra priorità. Our priority today must be to curb high energy prices and accelerate in every way the diversification of supply sources and domestic production. The context in which the government will have to act is very complicated, perhaps the most difficult since the World War II.
Also on Wednesday, Meloni went on saying that Italy will remain an active member of the EU on her watch and that it would continue to be a reliable partner of NATO in supporting Ukraine. Italy's new prime minister said that the only way to facilitate a peace deal between Russia and Ukraine is helping Kyiv to defend itself militarily. Meloni's two main allies, media magnate Silvio Berlusconi and League leader Matteo Salvini, are longtime admirers of Russian President Vladimir Putin. U.S. Embassy Chargé d'Affaires attended in person the confidence vote on Giorgia Meloni's new government at the Chamber of Deputies on Tuesday. Some fear Meloni could embark on a course of confrontation towards the Western alliance. back in 2016, Meloni defined the European Union as rotten to its core, while in 2014, Italy's new prime minister staunchly opposed sanctions against Russia after its annexation of Crimea.
Yemen's Ansar Allah movement is doubling down on its threats to target foreign cargo ships attempting to enter Yemeni waters illegally to steal oil and other natural resources. This after the government recently fired warning shots toward a Greek oil ship attempting to illegally load an estimated 2 million barrels of Yemeni oil from a port terminal in the province of Hadramaut. The warning shots forced the Greek cargo ship to abandon its mission and use its own fuel to head back home empty-handed.
This fuel ship was attempting to steal 2 million barrels of Yemeni oil worth millions of dollars. This money is supposed to be allocated to the Central Bank of Yemen, which would then be distributed to pay labor salaries across the country. Unfortunately, this money was transferred to a bank belonging to the Saudi royal family and was used to fund the American-Saudi aggression on Yemen.
According to the government in Sana'a, ending years of plundering and looting of the Yemeni natural wealth is essential to stimulate the Yemeni economy. It also pulls Yemen out of the decades of poverty and economic instability, which has already left millions of Yemenis in poverty. An initiative, the Sana'a government says, is promising to make it a reality. Observers believe that the world now needs to recognize that it is dealing with a new Yemeni nation, one that will never compromise its dignity and sovereignty.
The new identity of Yemen is because people's demands are now being met, whereby the Yemeni people are finally getting what they deserve as they reap the benefit of their natural resources, which used to be exploited and plundered. The latest warning shots we sent are an example of the military and political leadership's strengths, pose, and determination to protect the people of Yemen.
Yemen has for decades been described as the poorest country in the Middle East. However, the underlying reasons why that is the case are hardly ever discussed. According to experts we spoke with, one of the main reasons is the systematic exploitation of Yemen's natural wealth by the UAE and Saudi Arabia.
With the latest developments, foreign countries and companies who have a history in plundering Yemen's natural resources will have to think twice about entering the country's waters illegally, as the Ansar Allah movement has made it very clear it will not hesitate to use decisive military force to protect what it calls the Yemeni people's wealth. Yusuf Mawadi, Sana'a.
During his first speech as British Prime Minister, Rishi Sunak used the occasion to issue a call for unity. Sunak must find a way to quickly unite not just a bitterly divided Conservative Party, but also a deeply troubled nation. However, he also issued warnings of difficult times ahead.
I will place economic stability and confidence at the heart of this government's agenda. This will mean difficult decisions to come.
The Prime Minister has inherited a country in crisis. Energy prices are high, cost of living through the roof, and millions of Brits are expected to struggle this winter. Another worry for Sunak, Conservative Party popularity has plummeted in recent months, sitting approximately 30 points behind the opposition Labour Party. Sunak's supporters say he's economically experienced from his days as Chancellor and praised Sunak as Britain's youngest leader in 200 years and the first ever non-white leader. But his critics claim that's just not enough.
He definitely has the credentials, he definitely has the experience, been there in the as Chancellor before. But again, we need to understand, you know, where does he sit right here, right now, with everyday voters? He has not been elected by the people, as well as most people feel that he cannot resonate with the ones that are struggling. I'm not sure if it is real representation for anyone of a minority background, especially when he comes from a very, very elitist club, and he does not really represent many. He's probably top 1% of majority of brown people or Asians, whatever you want to call it, in the entire world. So it's very difficult to sort of resonate and feel sort of close in that way.
Many challenges lie ahead for the new Prime Minister, in particular how he's going to overcome Britain's many economic crises. However, even if he does find a way to overcome Britain's economic woes, question marks still remain surrounding if he has what it takes to win the Conservatives the next general election. Robert Carter, London.
NGC 23 is a remote galaxy which is more than 200 million light-years away from Earth. What's even more interesting is that the interstellar object was observed by none of the celebrity telescopes like James Webb, but by a new indigenous Iranian observatory called INO, short for Iranian National Observatory, marking a milestone in the country's quest for deep space.
Within 3 weeks ago, which we got the first light, the so-called first light, we had no idea about the quality of the image we are going to get, and it was excellent.
Another debut image shot by the 3.4-meter optical telescope is ARP-282, an interacting galaxy pair located approximately 320 million light-years away. Scientists at the Iranian National Observatory say their telescope could see objects as far as 7 billion light-years away.
Of course, we can use this telescope to observe even deeper objects, but the highest quality of this telescope can be achieved up to 7 billion light years away from us.
INO is built on Mount Gargash, north of the city of Isfahan, at a height of 3,600 meters above sea level. The project was initiated about 15 years ago, aiming at the development of a medium-class telescope to provide a research facility for national users.
In the next coming months, and especially in the next year, the telescope will be delivered to the astronomers as the end user of this expensive and complex instrument.
Constructing INO was the result of complicated scientific and technological efforts, but there was even a tougher challenge, U.S. sanctions. The anti-Iran measures block high-tech imports and access to foreign know-how. The Iranian team purchased the glass mirror blanks from a German firm, but then had to figure out how to construct nearly everything else on their own.
Due to U.S. sanctions and some financial problems, they cut their relation with us, and we did the rest of project within last 12 years by ourselves.
INO is still not fully developed. Engineers need to integrate software, fine-tune the active optics, and install the first science instrument, a high-resolution imaging camera. Once completed, the telescope will help scientists understand galaxy formation and stellar evolution and hunt for exoplanets.
With INO, Iran has marked its first giant leap in space exploration and has fairly entered the world space race. The telescope's builders are now thrilled to announce that they will soon release more stunning images of deep space, hoping to help the world catch a glimpse of the wonders of our universe. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
This is IRIB English Radio. Website is www.parstoday.com/en.
in the limelight.
A new report shows that social media giants, including Facebook, TikTok, Twitter, and YouTube, have failed to curb the spread of right-wing extremism and disinformation on their platforms regarding the U.S. midterm elections. Meanwhile, a new poll shows that over 2 in 5 Americans say they are concerned about being subject to intimidation or violence when voting in the midterms. In this regard, we have taken a look at some world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for the details, please. The website of Common Dreams wrote, Facebook, TikTok, Twitter, and YouTube are failing to curb the spread of right-wing extremism and disinformation on their platforms and must immediately implement safeguards with the pivotal U.S. midterm elections less than 2 weeks away, a watchdog has warned recently. In empty promises, inside Big Tech's weak effort to fight hate and lies in 2022, Free Press analyzed the policies of the 4 social media giants to measure how prepared each one is to combat Trump-backed efforts to sow doubts about upcoming electoral outcomes. According to Free Press, the problem is just as dire in advance of the 2022 U.S. midterms as it was during the nation's 2020 elections. In particular, the report found that the major social media networks have failed to clearly update their election integrity systems in time for the elections, created a labyrinth of company commitments, announcements, and policies that make it difficult to assess what they are really doing, if anything, to protect users, and failed to close what they call newsworthiness or public interest exceptions that give prominent users and politicians a get-out-of-jail-free card and allow them to post lies without consequences from the platforms. Free Press warned that these failures are likely to be felt not only at polling stations on November 8, but also on the streets. The unchecked spread of online lies about the 2020 election fueled real-world violence on January 6, said Nora Benavides, report author and senior counsel and director of digital justice and civil rights at Free Press, adding, and although most people in the United States now believe that big tech should do more to curb the online spread of disinformation and incitements to violence, social media companies keep failing to protect the users. As the report notes, Change the Terms, a coalition of more than 60 civil and consumer rights organizations, developed a set of 15 priority reforms for social media companies to implement ahead of the midterm elections that would fight algorithmic implications of hate and lies, protect users across all languages, and increase company transparency. Our coalition, of which Free Press is a founding member, then met with Meta, TikTok, Twitter, and YouTube throughout the summer 2022, calling on each company to implement these 15 priority reforms as soon as possible and to share more data about their enforcement practices around election integrity. Although tech companies had promised to fight disinformation and hate on their platforms this fall, there is a notable gap between what the companies say they want to do and what they actually do in practice. In sum, platforms do not have sufficient policies, practices, AI, or human capital in place to materially mitigate harm ahead of and during the November midterms. Benen Davies said, even in writing, platforms like Meta, TikTok, Twitter, and YouTube can't commit to the most basic online protections to limit the spread of the disinformation and hate. And in practice, our research shows ongoing gaps in companies' enforcement of their own meager safety policies. She added, these are systematic failures across all of the major social media companies that show how little the companies care about safeguarding elections and fighting extremism and lies on their platforms. After Twitter's new mega billionaire owner, Elon Musk, fired several of the platform's key leaders immediately upon taking over, Benavides warned that content moderation on the site is poised to become even worse. Free Press urged Facebook parent company Meta, TikTok, Twitter, and YouTube to take the following steps to stem the spread of bigotry and lies on their platforms, including stop amplifying hate and disinformation content and implement algorithms without discrimination. Protect people equally around the world and across languages through increased resourcing for civic integrity teams year-round and boost transparency about company business models and moderation and enforcement practices, ensuring access to data for external researchers and journalists. We're less than 2 weeks from the U.S. midterms. Benavides tweeted, adding, over 30 other national elections have occurred around the world this year, featuring conspiracy theories and lies fanned by online rhetoric that social media companies allow to flourish. What will it take for the culture of big tech to change? What will it take for civil and human rights to become a real priority with evidence to show for it? Meanwhile, the website of Truth Out wrote, over 2 in 5 Americans polled over the past week say they are concerned about being subject to intimidation or violence when voting in the midterms. New polling finds in an alarming show of the state of democracy in the U.S. According to a poll from Reuters Ipsos of over 4,400 U.S. adults, about 43% of Americans say they are worried about facing threats at polling locations. Democrats are more likely to be concerned about violence at about 51% versus Republicans 38%. Likely fueled, at least in part, by the far-right's attack on the Capitol on January 6, 2021, Americans are also concerned that groups will carry out violence after the election if they are unsatisfied with the outcome. The poll found, with over 2 in 3 Americans saying as such, the poll comes as there have been reports of armed far-right vigilantes intimidating voters in Arizona. Though there have not yet been reports of violence, the vigilantes have apparently been taking pictures of people using ballot drop boxes and threatening to post their information online. The vigilantes appear to have been galvanized by debunked right-wing claims that so-called ballot mules are stuffing boxes with ballots for Democrats. While there is zero evidence of widespread voter fraud or anything resembling ballot stuffing, the belief appears to have become so entrenched that vigilantes are taking it upon themselves to supposedly guard ballot boxes. Despite having no basis in reality, voter fraud has become a concern among the public as well. The Reuters Ipsos poll found that nearly half of Americans think that voter fraud is a widespread problem, while only 40% disagree. Republicans are more likely to believe in this lie popularized by Donald Trump, with 2/3 of Republicans saying they believe that Widespread voter fraud is an issue, and about one-third of Democrats saying as such. There have been other threats to voters from the right. In Florida, Governor Ron DeSantis' fascist election police arrested 20 people earlier this month, claiming that they knowingly violated election guidelines. But like many others who have been prosecuted for election-related offenses, those arrested were simply unaware of their voter eligibility status. In this case, some of the voters arrested were supposedly previously told that they were eligible to vote, but then they were arrested for illegally registering. At least 13 of the people who were arrested were black. The fact that concerns of violence in relation to casting a vote are so widespread and that there are already reports of intimidation is an alarming show of the erosion of democracy in the U.S. The far right has been ramping up voter suppression efforts in recent years. Between the Republican Party's gerrymandering, plans to mass challenge election results and infiltrate Democratic majority polling places or bills to flat out allow Republican officials to overturn election results, experts say the GOP is setting the stage to rig elections so that they never lose or effectively lose despite voters' will again.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station.
Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim.
I am a Muslim.
Islamite.
Islamite.
Allah my Lord.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم سلام عليكم dear listeners everyone out there everyone in the future and the past and the present welcome to the youth station we're here as always and we're going to drive the train today سلام عليكم sister Peter
سلام عليكم my dear brother and dear listeners I'm here
you know you could actually your name what does it mean
It means unique.
Unique, right?
Yeah.
In?
What?
In what language?
Persian.
In Persian. You know, you can actually use that in English. You can be like, listen, my name's Beta, and I'm the Beta version of myself.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I'm going to get upgraded and upgraded
yeah,
and upgraded.
I have this idea that everybody's a unique individual in his or her own way.
Yeah.
We're different.
No, but like in English, that's even better, isn't it? Because
yeah.
when you say that's a beta version, it means the next version is going to be better. You know
nice
what I'm saying?
Nice one.
Yeah.
And maybe, you know. Not always.
So, what standardizes
mm-hmm.
good and bad in your life?
You know what? First of all, I have to tell you that I believe that there are some things in this universe that are absolute good or absolute bad. For example, the existence of God is a kind of fact, a good fact that is absolute. You cannot just deny
it.
You know, you can deny it. But I believe that we are all human beings. In human history, we make mistakes. Today, I don't know, in the past, in the future, every time.
Right.
No matter how perfect we are, no matter how good we try to be, always there are many mistakes that we make. So I think you are not the one who will decide what is good or bad. So you need some guidelines. And these
okay.
guidelines, in my opinion, is actually the religion. I'm just not telling you that, okay, my brain is not that much mature to decide. Actually, I'm telling you that religion is a kind of area that will allow you to decide, will allow you to think, will allow you to elaborate things in a way that is useful, is practical in your life. Because, you know, human beings are like, okay, I'm going to go through something and I'm going to talk about this philosophically because I think I understand too much. So I think, for example, only understanding the soul of human is not enough for me. I'm going to know that it is about eternity or something. And all of these questions that are so philosophical, and I think these questions are just wasting times. with all respect I have due to people who are thinking and researching in these questions, I'm just going to tell you that in real life, these are actually wasting time.
You said that you need religion to tell you what's right and what's wrong. You know, I think religion is far more than right and wrong. And this life is more than discovering what's right and wrong, right? As you said, if I spend the entire of my life just trying to find out what's right and what's wrong, then when am I doing what's right and when am I not doing what's wrong, right?
You're not going to discover all of the right things or all of the bad things.
Precisely.
Here, you know?
Yeah. So your life is only limited. You're a limited human being, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to find out everything.
Exactly.
Right. So life is not about finding out what's right and what's wrong. If I rephrase what you said, or maybe what I understood from what you said, is this, that religion is something that is going to take you, hold your hand, take you through growth, and get you where you're supposed to be. That's the point of religion. Take you, get you to the place that you're supposed to be.
You are the one who is step by step, you know, get there. Sometimes there are many ways.
One way is religion and there are other ways.
There are many ways, you know, because you are, especially those people who are more intellectual, who are more smart and, you know, intelligent. And even sometimes these greed to be better than other people will make them think that they are better than any creature in this universe.
Okay, what's that got to do with our discussion?
Because when you think you're superior, you think you don't need God, you don't need religion. And I'm talking about this need that you have in yourself. And you try to ignore it because you want to be more powerful. You want to be something you are not. This is the point I want to tell you.
So you're basically telling me that I'm just weak. You're contradicting yourself. You know why? Because you're like, listen, religion's not going to take you there. You're the one who's going to get there all by yourself. It's you. It's all you. You go, guy, right? And then you're like, you're weak. And like, you can't do anything by yourself. You're weak. You're pathetic.
You are that much powerful. You have this limitation of power to go through this road. Because God created you in this way. You have a fitrat and something, I mean, a nature.
Okay, nature. Okay.
You have a nature or something that will help you to do some special things that is within your power. You know, but there are some things that aren't within your power. You cannot control them, like time, like many other things that makes you, again, weak towards complete thing like God.
Yeah, but like we started off talking about, look, we talked about right and wrong, right? We're talking about, do I need religion to realize what's right and wrong? Because right is right and wrong is wrong. Certain rights are right, they're universal. Certain wrongs are wrong, they're universal. Other rights and wrong might differ in cultures, right?
Mm-hmm.
The question is, do I need religion to decipher between the two? The answer was, what you said was, fair enough. Islam, yeah, fair enough. But religion is going to show you right and wrong because your mind cannot fully comprehend what's right and wrong. Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Right, fair enough. But what I'm trying to get to is religion all about finding out what's right
and
wrong?
No, at all. At all. Okay. I'm not telling you that.
So why do I need
it
religion?
Like, it's beyond
right and wrong.
Yeah.
What is that thing that's beyond right and wrong?
I was reading an article. It was about, he was lecturing in the class, and once one of his shy students came to him and just telling him that one of his siblings was bullied by other people at school, and he just, I think, lost his eyes, his legs, and something like that. And it was so dramatic, I think. His mother was really heartbroken by this incident, that all of the psychologists and doctors told her that you cannot just just go through the routine life that you had before again. And but there is a beautiful, interesting fact here that her mother was Muslim, and she was believing in afterlife, as all of the Muslim believe. And it was like, okay, she was hopeful about the thing that maybe her boy wasn't able to find justice in this world, but there is another world, that there is a God, there is another world that will answer this cruelty.
Okay.
And this hope helped her during times to go through the routine life she had, you know.
Right.
And this was like a magical thing for psychologists and doctors who just believed that okay, everything is science. You know, they were like that, and they told her, okay, it's impossible to get better, but she did it. And this was so touching for me, myself, that a religion even could be this helpful in these matters, in these spiritual matters, because we are created by a God who just knows everything about our creation, knows everything about our emotional feelings, about our souls, or everything. And this knowledge, which is beyond our knowledge, will help us to find our way in this world.
Yeah, as I said in the beginning, the religion isn't just meant for this world, right? It's خُلِقْتُمْ لِلْبَقَى لَا لِلْفَنَى. We've been created to live on, not to
not only in this
perish,
world.
You know? Yeah, that is what life, religion is supposed to prepare you for. That's the place that religion is supposed to take you. Fair enough, as you said, you're supposed to walk the path yourself, but there has to be a path for you to walk.
Mm-hmm.
That path itself is religion. There is a way, there has to be a direction that we head towards to become those people whom Allah speaks to and says, Abdi, ati'ni aj'aluka mithli, you know, oh my servant, obey me and I'll make you like myself, you know, like I'm generous, you'll be generous, I'm merciful, you'll be merciful, you know, I'm strong, you'll be strong. All these things that he has and he is, we are gonna manifest those beauties, right? And we're gonna carry on being those things after this world has perished. And we're gonna carry on being those things after the world has perished.
Mm-hmm.
That is what religion is for, right?
Nice.
Not
one.
Only to realize that is right and that is wrong.
Let's go for a break then. We're gonna come back.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
So, as you told me, I just understood that religion is something beyond what we thought, you know. It's something bigger. It's a vast area that it's like an ocean, I mean, that you will go there and there is no end in everything in religion. There are people just, they are like, okay, religion is like a prison and we're not going to go through this because we think that if we go through religion, we have to do something we just don't want to do in life.
You know, why
and,
you just
some prayings
think,
that
why
are
you
useless.
Think?
You know, they're like that.
Yeah, no, why you think that religion is a prison, you in the sense that someone, mm-hmm. whoever, might think that religion is a prison is because they've got a very surface approach, very
superficial
perspective of religion. If you'd see that you can't eat for 30 days or 29 days during the day, and you can't, you know, do certain things at certain times, you can't do this, that. All that is a prison, yeah, indeed. If you look at it from that perspective, it is a prison. That is why we learn the reason behind what we do, right? There's this beautiful hadith by Imam Ali alayhi salam. He says, there's states of hearts.
Mm-hmm.
The heart goes forward and it goes backward, right? When it goes forward, it's self-explanatory, what it means by going forward. I'll tell you how. When it goes forward, do whatever you can. For example, you pray the extra 2 units of prayer, 4 units, you read, I don't know, like 50 pages of the Quran, whatever you want. That feeling at that point, go, do whatever you want. You've got this spiritual phase, you're in this trance, whatever it is, you know, do it. And then there's an idbar, right? That means that coming back of the heart. Don't force yourselves. If you're in that stage for years, it's okay. You understand? It's okay. Do not pressurize yourself into having the superficial or surface perspective or view of the religion. That either I can do that, go through all these things, or I can, you know, live my life the way I want. No. When you do not want to do all of those things, don't feel pressured by your society, the environment you're in, with the people that you're with. No. Carry on with the bare minimum of religion that's there. People think that religion is something that, oh, I can't take a break from it. You understand?
Yeah.
No, it's not like that.
It's you life don't, style.
You know, you can actually take, quote unquote, a break, which is what, get your life, go on with whatever you do daily. Remember that there's God and there's a purpose in life that is God-centric. Your life is God-centric.
First of all, you have to understand that sometimes you have to change your perspective of religion. It's not a problem of religion that you think is like a prison. It's your problem. It's your mindset that will put some obstacles for you in this life that you think...
You're so harsh. You're actually very harsh. Okay, sorry.
Yeah, I know that. Yeah, okay. I know that, but sometimes you have to be harsh to tell the... true things, the facts,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, certainly.
And sometimes you have to change your perspective. And I mean...
it's all your fault.
Yeah. And religion is not a prison. Actually, it's a lifestyle. It's a beautiful path towards freedom. Be free. Because you are human.
Yeah, so that's where we got to. That there's something far beyond what we do every day in terms of actions. Actions does not really mean that you're religious. It means that if your life is God-centric, not your actions, that's what it is to be religious. With that thought, we can leave you to sleep over it and in the morning have your, you know, spiritual awakening or whatever.
Dear listeners, that was all the time we had for today's discussion. I wish you all enjoyed it. I leave you in the warm embrace of God. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
From the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Thousands gather in two Iranian cities to bid farewell to several victims of the recent terrorist attack.